I was dragged from sleep, far too soon, by a ringing phone. I floundered up, confused, because that didn't sound like my phone. It wasn't. I didn't have a phone anymore. Marconi was up on one elbow reaching for it, surprisingly coordinated. "Marconi," he said laconically. Then, "When?" "Yes. Have them wait. Thank you." And he hung up and rolled out of bed. "Problem?" I asked. I was so tired I was dizzy, but Marconi was pulling on a fresh suit in record time. "Not for you." He ducked into the bathroom and came back out 90 seconds later, ready for a board meeting. "There's been an incident. Someone made a mistake, and several of my people are dead." He came back over to the bed after this flat summary and sat beside me. "I'm sorry to leave you like this." "It's fine," I said, trying not to imagine exactly what he meant by incident or mistake. I had some experience, so I knew that was his "heads will roll" voice. "Go back to sleep," he said, easing down to soft-spoken without a blink. "Stay as long as you like." "Well," I said, tempted. I hadn't slept in a real bed in weeks, let alone anything that wasn't too short for my legs. A buzzer sounded downstairs. "My car's here," Marconi said. "I have to go." He leaned down and kissed me on the forehead, which was the single most innocent thing he'd done to me in 2 days. "Sweet dreams," he said, and was gone. When I woke up again, it was afternoon, and his huge shower was calling my name. And when I got downstairs, there was a bag of bagels on the counter. I stared at them for a minute, still waking up, then laughed. "Goddamn Marconi. Bagels, ha." There was a different security guy at the curb when I left. I waved at him, rolling my eyes, and headed for the Never Never. I ended up spending most of the day on Demon Reach. I didn't stop at Michael's, so it was just me. No Bob, not even Mouse. I didn't do it that way on purpose, but it turned out to be exactly what I wanted. I was feeling raw, maybe a little fragile. So I brewed a series of defensive potions, paced, and thought about Maeve. I couldn't threaten her. She could squash me like a bug, and just might do it, too. And I couldn't blackmail her, even assuming the queen didn't know what she was up to. They didn't get along, it was true, but they were a solid glacial power united in one big fuck you to Summer, and the Accords, and the tiny crawling humans. All right. So who could go at Maeve directly and win? Aside from the queen, anyway, because hell if I was trying that angle, unless I had no other options. I left at sunset and headed for Thomas's boat. It was back in its slip, though he still had the keys. I camped out on the deck with a couple of hot dogs I'd bought on my walk down and waited for the new moon to rise. The Leannan sheath kept me waiting. I was expecting it, but my hands were sweating and my pulse racing by the time she deigned to put in an appearance. "Child," she said, stepping lightly from nothing to the dock to the boat. "Godmother," I said, standing. She came and inspected me, smiling faintly. "Did you learn your lesson then?" "To do what I'm told?" I asked. "Odds aren't great, no." She sighed like I'd disappointed her, but she was a fairy, so there was a lot of, "What can you expect from talking monkeys?" in there, too. "Oh, child," she said. "Do try to stay alive through the winter solstice. I'd hate for you to miss your first one." She blew me a kiss. I felt it hit me like a pellet of ice, and I folded up on the deck, my internal organs turning inside out. I could feel her footsteps as she walked away, but mostly I was biting through my tongue and trying not to make too many wounded water buffalo noises. I lay curled up on my side after the ugly parts were over, my cheek pressed to the deck as I swallowed down the nausea. The moon looked down on me, probably mocking. It would just figure. I hauled myself up at last and, oh! It was like getting my arm out of a cast after a bad break when I was 8. Everything hurt like a bitch, but the sense of release and freedom was incredible. I paced the deck, patting myself down and accounting for all the required parts. Marvelous stubbly jaw, and amazing flat chest, and perfect enormous feet. I love you! Okay, it was possible I hadn't actually planned this out too well, because now I was a maniacally grinning guy on a boat in really uncomfortable jeans and a princess t-shirt. Ask me if I cared. The entire clan was there when I got back to Michael's, and there was a lot of applause and backslapping. Charity had baked a cake. It was a good night. I tossed around balls of light in the backyard for the younger kids, and Molly impressed the pants off everybody with one of her fireworks shows. I caught Charity and Michael standing on the back porch, arms around each other, beaming mistily at her. Not like I could talk. Hell of a kid, that girl. I liked to think I'd contributed, even just a little bit. Michael and I cleaned up while Charity got the Rugrats to bed. "I'll be out of your hair soon," I said, passing him with a stack of dirty paper plates. "No rush." Michael swiveled on his bad side to face me, turning on his cane more gracefully than I managed on my feet. "We like having you here." "Thanks," I said. Touched. It probably didn't make much difference to them, adding one more performer to the circus. But still. "But you do need a place of your own," Michael said. "A holding center." "Yeah," I said. "I know. I'm working on it." I slept great that night, even though the sofa bed was even smaller for me now. In the morning, I packed. I could get a substantial chunk of my worldly possessions into one backpack. I left the girls' clothes. Charity and Michael knew how to grow them tall, so one of their girls could probably fit into them pretty soon. The first task of the day was to track down Grimalkin. That wasn't difficult. He stayed in winter whenever he could, and he was a predictable little psychopath. I found him casually dissecting a pack of small lizardy things, occasionally pausing to lick their juices off his claws. All fairies are kind of like magical lawyers, when you get right down to it. But not even Mab loved contracts like Grimalkin loved contracts. I'd come prepared with a notepad, a bunch of random questions about obscure provisions of the Accords, and a studious expression. Grimalkin was happy to expound at length about how well he'd screwed everyone else over, which got him in a good mood and was also educational. I waited for a good opening, then casually mentioned how much fun Maeve was having in Chicago lately, with an implication of wild all-nighters and just a hint of wistfulness that she had so much independence from the Queen. Grimalkin didn't say anything, but I saw his eyes narrow. I excused myself 10 minutes later, willing to bet that he would engineer it so Maeve spent the next several weeks tied to Mab's apron strings and hating every second of it. That wasn't a solution, but it got her out of Chicago and it bought me time to work. I could feel Mab, an implacable cold presence in my chest. It had taken me months to realize that, through her, I could also feel the rest of Fairy spreading like a web. The Lianan sheath, and Grimalkin, and Maeve, and, recursively, myself. We all circled Mab, begging for her attention and simultaneously trying to displace it onto someone else. Everyone else was a lot better at it than I was, and I needed to catch up. I needed to get a leg up on Maeve. I needed it not to matter that she could turn me into a wizard pancake. I needed her to be afraid of me. I didn't know how I was going to manage that yet, but I'd figure it out. And in the meantime, I could start tugging on the web and seeing what happened. Oh. So that was the lesson. Well, what was the bell-ringing point of a fairy godmother when she wouldn't just out and tell you these things? Oh no, instead she had to go around... Hell's bells! Fine. The next time Mab ordered me to do something I didn't want to do, I needed to have an option other than yes or no. I had no idea how I was going to manage that either, but it was clearly time to start working on it. I came out of Ferry in downtown. I was running 10 minutes late, but it wasn't like Murph didn't know me and expect it.
She was waiting at a window table in an independent coffee shop we both liked.
The owner knew me, so he let Mouse come in and flirt his way from table to table, collecting pastry scraps in tribute. "Hey," I said, dropping my bag at the table. "Can I get you a refill?" "Nope," Murphy said, tilting her half-full cup at me. but the scones are great today. I came back with my coffee and a plate of chocolate cranberry scones. Murphy really wasn't kidding about them. "Okay?" I asked, pushing the preserves over to her. She nodded, taking a bite. "You?" "Same," I said. Murphy and I were having a weird patch. It happened to us periodically, but this one was lasting longer. We had something a little more concrete to be weird about, I guess. She was out of town a lot these days, and not talking much about it. I said yes whenever she wanted to see me, and didn't ask intrusive questions. We'd get over it eventually. We always had before. And I'd been thinking, in the long silences that stretched for weeks, that maybe it was okay to let it all go for good. The thing we'd never had. The potential thing. It had been there for a really long time, and maybe the complete lack of urgency should have clued me in sooner. I'm pretty sure Murph was way ahead of me on that one. I may be slow, but I do catch up eventually.
"Heard you were a girl," Murphy said, licking preserves off her thumb. "Stars and stones, welcome to the next 6 months of your life."
"Yeah," I said. "It was kind of like a vacation, actually."
"A testosterone vacation," Murphy said, amused.
"Only you, Dresden." "I'd meant more of a reality vacation. And, in reference to that 36 hours of Marconi madness, a sanity vacation." "Man, going back to celibacy was going to suck for an extra few months this time. Everything else, though, seemed to be sucking significantly less. It was a good day to be a man."
"You look different," Murphy said, squinting at me. I leaned over to see myself in the mirror behind the counter. Scruffy, too bony, vaguely confused expression, all as usual.
"Looks the same to me."
"Except for how you're smiling," Murphy said.
"You weren't doing that for a while there."
"I wasn't?"
She shook her head. I sighed and leaned my elbows on the table.
"Okay," I said, "straight up. How bad has it been?"
She sipped her coffee, thinking about it.
"Pretty bad. You've been kind of poke with a long stick and then back away fast."
"Oh," I said and made a face.
"So maybe all the distance wasn't just weirdness. Good going, Dresden."
Sorry?
"Whatever," she said, and flicked a straw wrapper at me. "There are a few people who worry about you, you know." For Murphy, that was the equivalent of clinging to my hand and sobbing into my shoulder from anyone else.
Yikes.
I put the straw wrapper between my lips and blew it back at her. "Well, maybe they don't have to," I said. "I'm a big boy again now."
Murph and I stayed longer than either of us meant to. It was nice, and we promised to do it again sooner than freaking Thanksgiving. Before leaving, I asked at the counter if they had a Yellow Pages. They didn't, but the cash register kid looked up the nearest outdoor supply store on his phone for me. People don't believe in ink on paper anymore. What's the world coming to? Moose waited outside while I picked out a winter-rated sleeping bag and a few other necessities. Then we ducked back through the Never Never, and I set up actual camp on Demon Reach. It was pretty homey. I rigged up a shelf for Bob out of some rocks and a plank. Mouse found an old bone to gnaw. I studiously didn't think about where or who it came from. I started a fire in front of the lighthouse and cracked a can of chili for dinner. I even had marshmallows to roast. I stayed out there longer than I'd meant to. I'd just been planning on a day or two, but then it was three, and then it was a week. I worked magic intensively for hours, until I entered a near-trance state of concentration. When I wasn't doing that, I did what I could with the lighthouse, repairing leaks and nailing down boards. I couldn't spend the winter there, not with just a sleeping bag. The lighthouse would take a lot more tools and expertise than I had. But still, it was quiet, and it was mine. And it felt safe. I thought about sex a lot, until the magic and the physical tiredness drove it out. And then I dreamed about it. And I seemed to have some sort of girl hangover, because I kept dreaming about that, too. Like most things, it was better in my dreams. The sex wasn't better,
I'm pretty sure it couldn't be without actually frying my circuits. I dreamed I was a girl for some of that, and for some of it, I didn't. Sometimes it changed on me, midstream. It was all very symbolic, vision quest, in touch with your subconscious crap. I hate that sort of thing. Still, sex dreams about Marconi. Sex memories. It had never been like that with anyone. I'd never been like that with anyone. Not even people I'd really cared about. Maybe that was it. When it didn't count, I could just let go. I didn't have any relevant experience, but I had the impression that you were supposed to be able to forget irresponsible flings, though. It would fade eventually. The afterburn of amazing sex, and the reminder of what it was like to sleep next to someone, and everything. Clearly, there was a reason I didn't have casual affairs. I wasn't built for them. My stupid brain didn't care what it was and what it wasn't, and had latched onto him just because he was there. It would fade. Mouse and I reemerged into the world on a Saturday. I checked my voicemail from one of the few remaining payphones in Chicago. Nothing urgent. I touched base with a few people who had pointedly wondered where the hell I was, and then got hold of Thomas. He offered to hand over the keys right then, so we met down at the boat an hour later. "There's beer in the fridge," he said, holding the cabin door open for me. "Bless you and all your endeavors." I dropped my backpack on the bunk while Mouse nosed around, inspecting his territory. "Is it too early, do you think?" "Nah." Thomas correctly interpreted that as a request for company, and plunked down in the tiny galley. Then he came right back up again, light on his feet like a dancer. He and Mouse simultaneously tilted their heads, though only Mouse's ears actually perked. "Someone's here," Thomas said. "Two. No, one man." "It's always something," I muttered, and opened the cabin door. Mouse shouldered past me, and by the time I made it up the half flight of stairs onto the deck, he was sniffing Marconi's offered hand. Mouse grumbled inquisitively, and Marconi crouched down, expression serious and respectful, to let Mouse deposit fur all the way up the sleeve of his snazzy wool coat. Mouse's tail began to thump. Not like I could talk. I distinctly remembered liking the way Marconi smelled, too. "Mr. Dresden," Marconi said, standing. He glanced past me to Thomas, lounging in the doorway, and his eyes went cold. "Mr. Wraith." Thomas acknowledged him with an incremental dip of the chin. Why did he get all the dignity genes? "So, sweetheart," Marconi said, taking two steps closer to me. I scowled. "How many times have I told you not to call me that?" "Not once, actually," Marconi said, one side of his mouth tipping up. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Thomas straighten. If his eyebrows got any higher, they'd come right off. Crap, crap, crap. He strolled over to stand beside me, hands in his pockets, and Marconi's eyes narrowed. They assumed matching polite smiles and sized each other up like they were measuring for pistols at dawn, or possibly chainsaws. It occurred to me very belatedly that somewhere in that creepy dossier of his, Marconi probably had a note on those old rumors about Thomas and me. Holy cats! If Marconi's obsessive proprietary thing clashed with one of Thomas's periodic bouts of brotherly protectiveness and they started fighting over me, I was jumping into Lake Michigan, no question. "Hey," I said, nudging Thomas. "Maybe a rain check?" "Sure," he said lightly, and cut me this look. "You don't want me to stay?" I shook my head at him. He dug out the keys and handed them to me, his fingers brushing my arm. It was deliberate. Thomas never touched anyone unless he damn well meant to. And his eyebrows started climbing again at whatever he got off me. "Thanks," I said, resisting the urge to start pushing him towards the dock. He already knew way more than I'd ever wanted him to. "You know where everything is," Thomas said. He was doing that thing where the entire half of the boat with Marconi on it didn't exist to him. "I'll call you." He leapt lightly to the dock and walked away. Marconi didn't look an iota less alarmingly polite. I said. Maeve should be out of Chicago for a while. It's temporary, but I'm working on something better.
Good, Marconi said. That's not why I'm here.
It's not? He came closer, flirting with the edge of my personal space.
If you're going to blow me off, I'd prefer that you did it to my face, he said.
The hell? What, so we can fight about it? I said, mouth moving automatically.
Marconi flashed me some teeth.
Yes. Or so I can convince you you're making a mistake, actually.
I am? Marconi's voice dropped. I think it's been amply proven how good we can be together.
I swallowed, having traitorous thoughts. Okay, yes, I said, because there is no point even trying to lie about that. Chemistry, we had it. But that was different.
Yes, Marconi said, and gave me a once-over that made it abundantly clear that he wanted to know all about the difference.
Empty night! Marconi liked men?
But, I said cogently,
you...
I saw an opportunity. I took it. That's what I do. He laughed ruefully. Only you would need a magical sex change operation to notice that someone is throwing himself at you.
You were? He couldn't have been. I noticed these things. Eventually.
Repeatedly. Frequently. He eased half a step closer. I felt like a mouse being hypnotized by a snake. Also, right now, God help me, he said.
I said. That was not a squeak in my voice. This is unexpected.
Marconi slapped a hand across his face and groaned. It was the most demonstrative I'd ever seen him, with his clothes on, anyway. And here I've been for the past week thinking, surely I was obvious enough, he said. Then he dropped his hand and looked me in the eye. I'd seen him stare down oncoming monsters like that while he loaded his rifle. I want you, he said. You oblivious, dribbling moron.
Oh, I said.
Marconi watched me flounder. Your turn, he said, after the silence had stretched too long. It's like a trade. Now you talk. I've already ritually sacrificed my pride.
Stars and stones, but he really had.
I said. I was kind of on a different page here. I know. Marconi smiled one of his friendlier, more harmless smiles. Welcome to the romance.
Oh my God, don't call it that, I said, appalled.
All right, Marconi said agreeably. The affair, then.
That was not any better. An affair implied lots and lots of sex. Illicit, passionate sex. Not inaccurate, but very distracting.
I don't know what to say, let alone what to do. It shouldn't have been a question. It wouldn't have been 6 months ago. That's the thing about doing things you thought you'd never do. There are suddenly so many possibilities.
Say yes.
He set one hand lightly at my waist. Let me take you to dinner. Argue with me about what movie to see after. He bit off the next thing he was going to say, but I knew exactly what it was. Heat flushed through me. My body had changed, but his hands hadn't. And the brush of his thumb on my hip bone made me ache.
You're crazy, I said on a shaky exhale.
I happen to know crazy ideas are your forte.
That was true. And yes, I still wanted him. That was also true. But this would count. And not just because we had the same parts now. Though that was a thing. It would make all the previous stuff count, too. His office couch and dinner and the picture of his mother. Yes or no? Hell's bells, always this. Maybe I was desperate. Maybe my judgment was completely shot. Maybe he only looked so good in comparison to the rest of my life, which was still an unholy mess. Or maybe this was just the first time I'd been able to see him clearly. "I'm picking the restaurant," I said. "And I have conditions." Marconi just lit up behind that buttoned-up exterior. It was amazing. "I like negotiating," he said helpfully. "Lots of conditions," I said. I was sure I would remember what they all needed to be any time now.
"Are there any attached to me kissing you?" Marconi asked politely.
"Oh, yeah," I said. "Lots. But there aren't any attached to me kissing you, are there?"
It wasn't fair, asking him to show me his vulnerable underbelly like that. But he'd been doing it for the past 5 minutes, and it was kind of addictive. His mouth curled, rueful. "No," he said. "If that's how you want to play it, there aren't."
Being taller than him was pretty excellent. Epilogue. I didn't really bother looking for witnesses when Mouse and I popped out of the Never Never behind the oak tree and jogged up the street. It was 1 in the morning, and I was late. Demons late. Missed dinner by 5 hours late. I wasn't even sure Marconi would still be there. I didn't think he stayed in this house much when I wasn't with him. I slept on the boat. I slept on Demon Reach. I slept in Ferry. And sometimes I slept here. Marconi didn't ask where I'd been if I didn't volunteer it. And I didn't ask him what he did all day. If I decided to ask, I knew he'd tell me. And if he asked, I was starting to think I'd answer. Hendricks materialized from the shadows at the top of the doorway.
"Boss said to let you in," he grunted, and punched in the security code for me.
I wanted to ask if John had already gone to bed, but I was afraid if Hendricks and I actually tried to have that conversation, one or both of our heads would explode. So I just nodded and closed the door behind me. A light was on in the kitchen. The place was predictably spick and span, but I could tell that he'd cooked. Oh, crap. The rest of the downstairs was dark. There just happened to be an enormous pillow in front of the fireplace. Mouse stretched out on it with a groan. I went up to the bedroom, where John breathed quietly on his side, his back to a single candle left burning for me. The heater was on full blast, and he'd pushed the covers down, showing me his back and the bare curve of his ass. I undressed silently while I ogled him. I shouldn't have bothered, because he stirred the minute I put my knee up on the bed. He stretched, rolling to face me in the same motion.
"I'm sorry," I said, wincing in anticipation.
John blinked sleepily and pulled me down to him. "Still in one piece?"
"Yeah."
My stubble rasped, interestingly, against his when we kissed.
"Sorry, I borrowed Molly's cell phone to call you, but then something ate it."
He cracked up, snorting helplessly against my cheek. "You really could not make that up, could you?"
"No," I said, and bit his ear. He'd probably known where I was the whole time. His creepy stalker ways were just one of the things we weren't talking about. I wasn't even putting a yet on the end of that sentence. Yet. Still, getting stood up is never a good time.
"Did you eat?"
Little known fact. John Marconi can fuss like nobody's business. Or maybe that's just the way he expressed his screaming desire to grab my life with both hands and organize it until it cried for mercy.
"Dumplings," I said, distracted by his wandering hands.
"Yes, sweetums," he said, and pinched my ass. I yelped and armed myself with a pillow swiped from under his head. He pinched me again, fast as a striking snake, and I went for him with a howl. I got in one solid whack with a pillow before he knocked it away from me. and then I only had a few seconds of illusion that I might have the upper hand before he got both of my wrists behind my back and locked my legs between his strong thighs. I thought he'd flip me over, but he rolled instead and pulled me on top of him. I was still tripping off the night's adrenaline, and I shoved hard against him when he let go of my hands and grabbed my ass. "Yeah," he said, voice rasping. "Come here." We realigned, and I hissed between my teeth when he closed his legs around my cock. It was a little dry, but the burn was working for me. He wasn't fully hard yet, but he dug his fingers into my ass and urged me on. Not like I was going to argue. I thrust until I came, and he caught my noises in his mouth. Nothing fancy, but it worked. I tried not to think about the fact that I'd been all over him and begging for it when I was a girl, but now I was way more cautious, constantly asking, "Do I want to do this? How about this?" I also wasn't thinking about how, when I was tired or tipsy and not worrying about it, the things I wanted were exactly the same. I knew what I wanted just then. I went for the nightstand drawer and took it as a personal compliment that the box of condoms was on top of the handgun. He was ready to go with all the friction. I rolled the condom down him with both hands and bent my head. His fingers closed warmly on the back of my neck. "That's it," he said, voice strained. "Oh, Jesus." I took a quick breath and slid down again, and swallowed, and then set a slow rhythm. Marconi's thumb was digging hard into the back of my neck, but under my hand, his stomach muscles practically quivered with the force of his restraint. "Come on, sweetheart," he said. "Make noise if you want to." And I found I did, quiet sounds of appreciation low down in my throat. How did he always know? Will you open your eyes for me?" The stutter made me ridiculously smug. I looked up. He stared me right in the eye, focused and intense, not sparing a glance from my mouth. I would swear he didn't even blink when he came. He was smiling, rare post-coital dopiness showing through. I disposed of the evidence as fast as I could, then hurried under the covers he held up for me. He tucked into my shoulder, sleepy-eyed and pleased as a cat. "John," I said, keeping my voice quiet. "Hmm? Why did you ask me about soul-gazing?" His head popped up, alert to his back teeth, just like that. "Damn it! What did it take to get one past him?" "Is this your question?" he asked. "Yeah," I said, which meant that the next one would be his. It had been a pretty safe position, knowing that I had the next one dangling. And here I was, spending it on a weird thought that just wouldn't quit. John eyed me from 3 inches away. "You think you already know the answer," he said. "You wanted to know just how much I've changed," I said. God knew I did. And John actually had a shot of looking into my soul again to compare. He shook his head, smiling faintly. "No," he said. "I wanted to show you that I have." The end.
This podfic was recorded for Fish Patrol for ITPE 2014.
I hope you like it, baby. It's been so amazing getting to know you, just being part of podfic fandom. I've met so many awesome people, made so many unbelievable memories, and getting to meet you in real life was incredibly fun. I hope it happens again someday, but in the meantime, I hope this podfic brings you all the joy that making it for you did for me. Merry Christmas! I'd also like to thank Light Gets In for letting me record her story, and the ITPE organizers and mods, because this is just the best challenge ever. I can't wait to hear my podfic. I'm just dying. Happy holidays, everyone. Bye.
You are the dark ocean bottom, and I am the fast sinking anchor.
Should I fall for you? Should I fall for you? You are the scar on my tissue that I show all my new friends. Should I show you me? Should I show you me? All we need is a little bit of momentum. Break down these walls that we built around ourselves. All we need is a little bit of inertia. Break down and tell that you are the rain and the fire. Deep in the trees, when no one was looking, should I speak of this? Should I speak of this? You are mirage in the distance. Defies the heat of the desert. Should I believe in you? Should I believe in you? All we need is a little bit of momentum. Break down these walls that we built around ourselves. All we need is a little bit of inertia. To fall, these rules are made to break us. These rules are made to break, and these walls are built to fall.